ladies and gentlemen. A warm welcome to everyone tuning in, wherever you're from. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is the websites. My name is Henrik Palmgren. We're headquartered out of Scandinavia. And today we're talking with Mike Mitchum. He's a researcher and activist with a background in IT systems consulting. In January 2012, he co-founded Stop Smart Meters UK to raise awareness among the public about the dangers of smart meters and our rights to refuse them. To date, the campaign has served over 100,000 legal notices to entities and individuals pushing the smart metering agenda on behalf of nearly 1,400 people. Following concerted efforts to appeal to government policymakers and advisors, Mike and co-founder Dr. Elizabeth Evans were asked to give evidence at a televised parliamentary select committee hearing at the Palace of Westminster in April 2013. Mike was also recently featured in Take Back Your Power by Josh Del Sol, whom we had with us not too long ago, which examines the dangers of the smart grid. And today we'll address the bigger picture with the smart grid, the connection to our future, the future developments of the grid, and also the major privacy and health concerns that is intimately tied into it. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for coming on with us. It's going to be exciting. I'm glad to finally have you on as well. We've been in contact back and forth for a while, so good to have you with us, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me on, Henrik. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
This is very important. We've talked about it in the past, but it's a topic that we need to discuss and return to, because it's just the effects are immense, not only on human health, but to the natural world, and the privacy issues and everything is basically connected with this one issue, which makes it just so much more interesting. But tell us first, Mike, a little bit, when you decided to start Stop Smart Meters, the UK.
Sure. It was in January 2012, so nearly 2 years ago now, was when we created a website and really started becoming active in raising awareness amongst the general public here in the UK about an issue which, frankly, does not still have a great deal of awareness. But back then, you could ask people, you know, if they'd heard about smart meters, and most people would say, what's a smart meter? But prior to that, you know, over the maybe 6-9 months preceding it, I'd been smacked in the face by the reality of the smart grid agenda on a couple of fronts. The first is that I was actually at an industry event, and the subject, I'm not a networking guy, my background's in IT, but I'm more a kind of desktop applications guy. But I was at this networking event, as in an event for networking type technologies, and one of the subjects that was covered was IP version 6. And without getting technical, IP version 6 is the new addressing schema for the internet. We currently work on IP version 4.
Yeah.
And whenever you plug in a URL into your browser, redicecreations.com, we'll use domain name servers out in the internet to find your website using numerical code. And apparently we're running low on these numbers, these addresses that are available. So
yeah.
IP version 6 was introduced, funnily enough, and any numerologists that listen to the program will like this, it was introduced on the 6th of the 6th, 2012.
I remember this exactly, 666, right. IP yes. version 6, the number of the beast. It's a great one, isn't it?
Absolutely, and wait until you hear what Sampong Bizano from IBM has lined up for us, but we'll get to that later.
All right, okay.
The premise is essentially that IP version 6 has created 340 undecillion new IP addresses. I'd never heard of the number undecillion.
Undecillion, okay.
Yeah, This is a trillion, trillion, trillion. So we now have 340 trillion, trillion, trillion new IP addresses available to those, you know, organizations that want to get products and services onto the web. Talking about Sam Palmisano from IBM, he said that we are now at the point where we are able to put every product, every service, every object, and every person online to make them network aware and network attached. So the irony there of the IP version 6 and the date that it was released won't be lost on some people. And what was actually disclosed to me in this meeting quite openly, it was a private meeting, but it was disclosed fairly openly, was that there are plans afoot to introduce legislation that will force property developers to put radio frequency identification chips. So these are tiny little microchips. They can be, you know, very, very small in size. In fact, they're bringing to market edible microchips as well, which we could maybe talk about later.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the planet, as part of this redevelopment in how we build properties, and I think this is kind of linked into Agenda 21 and the whole sustainable development mantra, is that they want to be able to sense and respond to different parts of the house, and the smart meter is going to be key to this plan. So property developers will put RFID sensors in all of the components of the house or building as they're being built, and then ultimately, once the smart grid is in place, smart meters will be able to determine whether you are running a radiator underneath a window that's open, and therefore potentially being, you know, wasteful of your energy. So this plan with this Internet of Things, which is the name that they're giving this, but it belies what's effectively a nauseating plan to completely remove any elements of privacy that we have left and make all products or services trackable from, you know, the time that products are created right through to the point where they're put in your RFID-enabled wheelie bin. The marketers and businesses, governments, etc., will be able to see what you've done with those products right from the point where you picked it up to the point where you put it down throughout its lifespan. So I was pretty shocked when I found out about just how invasive this technology is and can be and is actually earmarked to be in our lives. And some months followed, and I ended up going to a talk by Ian Crane. He's a friend of mine. You've had him on your show.
Yep.
Ian has been very active talking about fracking recently, which also ties into this smart grid issue as well. But at this talk, I had a chance encounter with somebody who avidly campaigns against cell towers and mobile phone type radiation, and she plugged me into the dangers of electromagnetic radiation on our biology and the biology of our natural habitat as well. And I was pretty shocked by what I discovered. This is a major blind spot for a lot of people. We all love our gadgets, I think, to a point, but many people just do not realize the dangers that these technologies present to our extremely delicate biological systems and processes.
Yeah.
And it was maybe just a couple of months after that I first heard about smart meters. I heard a great interview you did with Josh Hart from Stop Smart Meters in California. And myself and Liz, my co-founder, Dr. Liz Evans, we realized that this was a major issue that was coming that would hugely increase the level of exposure within, you know, a public setting and in your own home, that could be avoided, that there were better ways of doing this smart grid, and that the problems actually really did not stop at the health issue. It has cybersecurity threats, major cybersecurity issues. It has, as I mentioned, these privacy issues, higher bills people are facing here in the UK, and these smart meters are being very, very heavily promoted by big corporations who I think have lobbied very successfully governments to have them introduced under government mandate. But actually, what's behind it is a burgeoning, you know, corporate scene that is trying to figure out ways of exploiting us in our homes even further and controlling our behavior. So we set up the campaign to just raise awareness in the mind of the public.
Yeah.
And that's what we continue to do.
Well, very good. It's much needed, of course, at these times. It feels like the smart meter has become, I guess, the pioneer in the smart grid, the main component that they've decided to kind of, all right, let's try to achieve this one goal, if you will, this milestone in the process. And then we can piggyback things, you know, on top of this technology, the development of it, and maybe that's an idea for them to test and everything else. But as you say, it seems like it's not going to stop with the smart meter. This is going to be turned into a complete grid where every single gadget is there and connected in some capacity. I mean, it's remarkable to realize, you know, how they're going to pull this off. But they put it on, usually they're going to put it on the manufacturing scale of things, right? So the production of new technologies or new gadgets or new devices or whatever you have, even furniture perhaps, or, you know, television mm-hmm. sets, fridges, dishwashers, whatever that plugs into the wall is going to have a communication with the grid in it. How far away do you think that is? So we're talking 5, 10, 20 years away?
Well, there is a wonderful documentary that we've put on our website on the homepage, Pyramids of Waste, The Untold Story of Planned Obsolescence. And you've seen it?
Yeah, I have. It's excellent. Very good.
This tells the story in very clear terms of how for at least 100 years or so, corporations have sought to create repeat buying within their customer base. And the example that's used in the documentary is light bulbs. The documentary's nickname is the Light Bulb Conspiracy. And it talks about the major light bulb manufacturers at the time that were capable of producing light bulbs that lasted over 100 years.
That's right.
You know, there's a light bulb in a fire station in America that a couple of years back had a birthday party to celebrate its 100th birthday.
Yeah.
And what they realized was that, you know, if we have a product that works that well and lasts that long, we won't get our customers coming back to us and buying more products. So they designed in planned obsolescence, and cutting to present day, it's widely acknowledged that planned obsolescence is a reality. I've had, you know, gadgets and products that have failed, you know, not long after I've got them, or right on the point where it's time to buy a new one under contract, for example. And this planned obsolescence is very much a part of our reality. It's hugely wasteful. It's hugely resource intensive, and it's arguably responsible for consuming vast amounts of resources and energy
yeah.
at a time that we're being told we need to stop doing that. But this
exactly.
is very deliberate.
Yeah.
And so what we will see ultimately is the strong possibility that governments will legislate for products to have these RFID chips in them. The EU is already limiting what products we can buy. Recently, it was announced that you can only buy a certain kind of vacuum cleaner that has a particular energy profile. I would be surprised if that doesn't have RFID in it. But prior to that, we had a ban on incandescent light bulbs, and we all have to use these mercury-filled compact fluorescent ones yeah. now, and so, which also emit frequencies, by the way. So I think it's really just a matter of time before we are effectively kettled into a space where you either keep what you've got, fix it, or you have to buy a product that has new kinds of doodads attached to it that emit radiation and tell your smart meter what you're doing with it at a given point in time. And like you say, it's covering the gambit of covering the gamut of products that are out there, from furniture to clothing to food to we have smart pills now that are being pushed by big pharmaceutical, and these smart pills have edible RFID chips on board that are capable of telling potentially your smart meter or whatever RF capable device is keying into it, what your heart rate is at the time that you take the pill, what your body position is, and what time you took it.
Wow. What is the reasoning yeah. behind that from official sources? Is it to aid in the the diagnosis or something, or what?
Well, there are technologies, unfortunately, or parts of the pharmaceutical industry as well that are looking at embedding RFID into silicon breast implants now.
Right.
This is to aid with diagnosis of breast cancer. But in my mind, this is like using a baseball bat to diagnose a broken leg. You know, you have a technology in there that is begetting the problem that it claims to be looking for.
Yeah.
And this whole telemedicine thing is going crazy. But I the justification of the smart pills is that it will provide better clinical data on the efficacy of treatment plans.
You know, I used to really watch the RFID developments many years ago now, maybe even like, well, back in 2006, 2007, I was really kind of following the developments where they were at. And at least at that time, on the official, you know, level, they were not that advanced. It was there were certain issues. It wasn't really, you know, efficient of going through, let's say, an accumulation like a body that has water in it, and you know, natural muscles and fibers and stuff like that. Do you know where they are at this stage now with RFID chips? How advanced are they getting, and are they getting just, you know, smaller and more powerful and stronger? Because at that point, it was this idea that it wasn't until you actually were close to a reader that actually transmits the signal that the RFID chip is bouncing back that signal. But what they were looking at is, of course, a transmittive RFID chip at that point. Do you know if there has been a development of any such thing yet?
Well, the whole nanotech industry is racing towards highly invasive, biologically interactive technologies. What I would say is that as far as the reach of these technologies goes, there are nanotech sprays available now that you can apply. This is like a paint, and you can apply this to existing antenna of anything from an RFID chip to a cell tower that will boost the signal of several orders of magnitude. So without needing to increase the power outputs or inputs associated with whatever that device is using, let's say if it's an RFID chip and it's activated either using RF energy or small batteries, etc., depends on how big it is, then you can apply the new antenna technologies that are coming onto market with that are nanoscopic in scale and boost the reach of whatever it RF signal it's trying to emit. So there are developments happening with the antenna technology. Everything's getting smaller, and again, a lot of these nanotechnologies, well, nanoscopic in size, can penetrate down to, you know, profoundly deep levels of biology.
It's just unbelievable what they're building and constructing here, and we can get deeper into that a little bit later, I think. But in terms of the smart meters and everything else there, let's see if there's anything more you're just going to give out to our audience there, and we could see what happens specifically in the UK, and then maybe in the extension in the EU as well. Because do you know if it's as built out in the European Union as it is in America at this stage? I mean, my brother, for example, he has a place where they still don't have a smart meter, fortunately. There are certain areas more out in rural places and stuff like that where they don't have it in Sweden and things like that. So it's not completely blanketed yet with all these things. How is it in the UK right now?
In the UK, the install base is, relatively speaking, still quite low. The biggest deployment has been via British Gas, and BG have installed over 1 million here now, out of a population of about 60 million. Across the rest of Europe, uptake in Spain and Portugal is approaching 10%, France 4-5%. Italy and the Nordics have probably got the highest level of adoption so far. Italy went for a wired version. 10 years ago. So there are ways of doing this via our telephone lines, which are already in our homes and don't actually present any health risks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But for some reason, a lot of the countries are not going for the wired alternatives at the moment, despite the fact that there are many calls, both within the EU, Council of Europe, and within local national sovereign governments as well, to restrict the amount of radio frequency and microwave exposure experienced by children and pregnant women. you know, in Belgium, there is a ban coming into force on the sale and advertising of mobile phones to children under the age of 7. In France, there has been government moves to halt and, where possible, reverse the use of Wi-Fi in schools. So there's a recognition on one level by governments within Europe that radio frequency, microwave radiation is harmful, but it doesn't seem to have kind of clunked through yet that these smart meter technologies are going to add to exposure levels in spades and actually can expose people to far higher levels of RF radiation than mobile phones can and Wi-Fi routers can. So the planned rollout timescale for this within the EU is 2019. The UK earlier this year announced a one-year delay. So if the government gets its way here, then we'll have smart meters by 2020. But there is a rabid appetite to get these things in place as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So even though the EU actually didn't mandate smart meters, what they said is that if there is a business case there for smart metering, we'd like to see 80% of countries in the EU with smart meters, but only if the business case stacks up. And actually, Germany hired consulting firm Ernst & Young to do a report, and that report concluded that the business case for smart meters simply wasn't there. They would not get the savings that would justify the investment.
Right.
You know, so we not all countries are adopting smart metering. But the ones that are, and especially here in the UK, even though the government has said, okay, we will adopt smart meters, even though the business case is really not there either, they have still not made them mandatory here. But what we're seeing is the big energy and utility companies lying to customers and saying that they have to have smart meters. That there are laws that are being introduced, they're lying about the way that they work, they're lying about the RF exposures. So even though on the one hand the government said we won't make them mandatory and you don't have to have a smart meter if you don't want one, because of the awareness problem that we have where people don't see this coming, which is what we're obviously trying to address, people are being duped into having them by their energy supplier. And why this is very bad news is that it's not like the government have covered themselves in glory here by making them voluntary.
Right.
Because what they've done on the side, very sneakily in my opinion, over the last couple of months, is introduce new rules, new licensing rules for energy providers, so that if you say, I will have a smart meter because my energy company is telling me that it's just an upgrade and I have to have one, at the end of this year, you won't be able to get that out of your home, because energy companies are being blocked from replacing existing smart meter installations with analog ones. So there's a really nice partnership happening here,
right,
where the government's not made it mandatory. They've said it's voluntary. Energy companies are saying you have to have them. People are being duped into it. And then, sorry, at the end of this year, you won't be able to get this out of your home because you said yes, and the energy company needs to recoup its investment.
Do you know if this has been subsidized in any way by the UK government?
Well, my understanding is that the energy suppliers themselves are footing the large part of the bill. What this is costing is the average household in the UK, £400 for the £12 billion price tag that was placed on it. The government has actually created a couple of new bodies that will oversee and manage some of the data collection, and they are multi-billion pound contracts. So the taxpayer is underwriting part of the funding, but the energy companies are footing the bill. And this, in my mind, is why we, at least in part, are seeing a great fiasco over energy price rises, where the big energy companies were recently hauled into a UK government select committee hearing, parliamentary select committee hearing, and asked to justify these, obscene price rises right at the time where, you know, we have winter coming and obviously people's disposable income is just ever decreasing.
Yeah.
And how can they justify these big bill increases? And what has not been mentioned over the last 3 or 4 weeks of this playing out in the press, where you've had politicians saying this is outrageous. These same politicians are the people that brought about the smart metering, or at least ushered it in on behalf of whichever corporations had their ear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no mention that smart meters are going to add £400 to the bill that people are paying. It's an awful lot of money. The big energy companies are going to win from this program, because what it's going to allow is a much higher level of granularity to be achieved on what energy users are using and how, at what time of day, and a whole new realm of tariffs will be introducible that will, if you want to save money, you'll be in a position where you either have to give sovereignty of control of your appliances and devices in the home to the energy company. And these smart meters are capable, or will be capable, of enabling this kind of control. Or you'll have to just spend all waking hours monitoring what you're using and figuring out what best time of day it will be to use a particular appliance in order to hit the lowest price part of that day. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Talk about micromanagement. My God. And you'll be able to, they'll be able to nudge, you know, your behavioral patterns pretty much on your energy usage, if this goes far enough, which it will, of course, because this is what's in the plans, you know?
That's right. So what we'll see is a higher degree of control of individual behavior at home. And make no mistake, these smart meters are capable of figuring out a lot of different things. There was a report done by Dr. Ian Brown of the Oxford University's Internet Institute a year or two ago, which talked about the privacy aspect of smart meters. And in his paper, he quoted a report from 2010 by Quinn, where the kind of data that can be gathered is mind blowing. It includes the ability to see, what times you're getting home and leaving the house. It would provide the means to see how often you cook with particular appliances. You know, let's say, for example, the cooker or the microwave. It would allow energy companies to see, you know, what kind of behavior individuals within the house are exhibiting on almost, you know, a real-time basis, potentially in some cases, but also over time. And that kind of data can be sold. It can also be hacked. This is a wireless grid that we're talking about here. And so if your smart meter is capable of submitting data about your energy use and behavior at home, to your energy company wirelessly, then those wireless signals can be intercepted and used for nefarious purposes. We published a story recently where a hacker had managed to get access to a wireless baby monitor that was monitoring a 2-year-old child. Parents lived in the States, and I think were in at the time, but this was a web-enabled wireless baby monitor, and the hacker was, or this creature was molesting the child verbally over the loudspeaker.
Oh, wow.
And so we have to recognize that there are people like this out there. You know, we all love the internet for the freedom that it provides, the freedom of expression, etc. But it's a bit of a wild west out there, and we have to protect ourselves and our loved ones from predators like this. And what we're doing with the smart meter is providing whoever has the means to eavesdrop on the data that's being communicated with the means to build a profile on when we're at home, when we're not at home, and which individuals are at home at given particular times of day. So is a children's games console used at one particular time of day over a period of weeks when no other appliances are used during that period of time? that potentially suggests that the child is home alone and gives somebody with this kind of agenda the means to exploit it. So we're talking about, you know, huge invasions in our privacy here.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable in terms of what people don't know goes on or what can be done with it. It's like, you know, these devices, all the ports are open. There's no, like, you know, scanning software or antivirus or anything like that. And even if there is, there's no 100% security and safety. If you have systems like this, there is going to be someone who's going to be able to hack them. That's just, that's always been the case. But I was going to want to ask you a little bit more about what kind of data it sends out and potentially, let's say, internal communication within the house, let's say, because obviously the smart meter is connected to the power grid that's measuring. You know, the base function here is to measure the usage of power. There are things like network power line devices, small gadgets that you basically plug into the wall, and then you can communicate between two, sources that need, the Ethernet connection, the network connection. That means basically that if you have a fridge, let's say, that is plugged into the house power, line, if there was technology for the fridge to communicate with the smart meter, that would be data that would be circling around within the house power line, if you know what I'm saying. And that could that be another situation here as well, that it doesn't necessarily have to be even on the Wi-Fi? Let's say you turn that off or something, but there's other ways that communication can occur with your devices in your home.
Right. If I'm understanding the question, then if you have web-enabled something, whether it's wireless or wired, you've given a particular device or product the means to be reached via the web. This is how the internet works. You know, we have uniquely identifiable internet addresses that allows you to find a particular page when you go to your search engine or browser. So yeah, it's a really good point. Whether it's wired or wireless, it's only going to be the security, which is as good as the people that have created it, that's stopping your data from being exploited. The cybersecurity issue, it also goes, you know, beyond the individual level and beyond the individual home and gets into the realms of national cybersecurity threats. As a result of the design of this so-called smart grid, you've had criticisms from the former director of the CIA, James Woolsey. We've had criticism from the FBI, who've said that smart meter hacking and energy theft is real. It's being done predominantly, I think, at the moment, in at least as far as this report went that I read, in Mexico. There's organized crime gangs that are going around and reconfiguring smart meters to report better costs for people, which on the one hand might sound great, but those costs, make no mistake, will be socialized for everybody else through higher bills. We have GCHQ here, the government's ears, that have criticized smart meters and said that they'd leave UK homes vulnerable to terrorist attack. And so it's been made quite clear by some fairly well-established authorities that the smart grid as it currently stands is not smart at all. What we're talking about is the web enablement of our entire domestic and small business energy supply and also water supply as well in some cases. We're talking about this at a time when cyber warfare is on the increase. We have reports in the mainstream media where so-called rogue nations are building and friendly nations are building cyber warfare units within their governments to tackle this burgeoning issue. And yet we have a situation where our energy companies and our utility companies, at the behest of governments, are making our, you know, what we need to heat ourselves, to cook, and to drink water available to hackers online. You know, we had in I think 2010 there was a hacking conference, an ethical hacking conference, where a group of German hackers showed that the security within smart meters was so woeful that they were able to breach it with ease. And this was a real smart meter that had been looked at from, I think the company's called Discovergy in Germany. And they were able to not only breach security with ease, but they were able to see information like what TV programs people were watching. That information was being made available to them via the smart meter. So
now how is that possible? Sorry to interrupt, but how is that possible? How is that? Because that means there's a communication between the TV and the smart meter, right?
If it's a smart TV, then the level of data that can be communicated between the TV and the smart meter would be far higher than what it is currently. But they did this with a conventional television, and it was the energy consumption pattern was able to be analyzed, cross-referenced against online databases. So your television draws energy, and it basically has, you know, right through the color spectrum, the need to pump out either more light, less light, where the scene is brighter or darker. And those signatures are called digital signatures. And what the smart meter can do is provide digital signature processing, whether you have a smart TV or not, to show what it is you're watching on television. One of the things that we talk about in Josh Del Sol's film, Take Back Your Power, is new products that are coming to market that will add in spades to the amount of data that's actually being collected when you're watching TV as well.
Yeah.
Verizon have a patent now for a product that they call the Smart TV Detection Zone, and this will be able to listen to your conversations whilst you're watching TV, and not only eavesdrop on what you're talking about, but it will be able to determine your mood and how you're talking about things. And so if you're
and then that information, of course, can be sold to the production company at a cost for, like, you know, it's like an active online focus group that you can do of your product right there. You know?
Right. With active targeting of adverts as well. So the example that was used here in selling this technology was, hey, isn't this great? If you're bickering with your other half, then it will serve up an advert for marriage counseling whilst you're watching TV.
Oh,
you know,
Jesus.
It's crazy. Getting into the cybersecurity issue, though, I think one of the major design problems that will be looked back on with horror, and I hope this doesn't happen, but I think it's a question of when rather than if, is that design specs here in the UK dictate that smart meters are designed to fail to off. So if the smart meter is tampered with in any way or hacked, it will disconnect your supply. You know, if you're some rogue individual who is trying to tamper with their meter, then it can, or you haven't paid your bill, it can disconnect you, and it will also fail your supply to off. Now, where this comes in to very dangerous territory is the fact that if it's tampered with remotely by somebody other than yourself without your knowledge, it can disconnect you. And we also have within the design specs the need for smart meters to have an operational rating, temperature-wise, down to minus 10 degrees. And if they fail, as I mentioned, they'll fail to off. A couple of years ago here in the UK, we had a winter that saw minus 20 in some parts of the UK. The smart meters only needing to be designed down to minus 10 could potentially fail to off and cut you off from your energy supply and your water supply, if it's a web-enabled, smart, water-metered water supply, at the time you need it most. So there is crazy decisions being made in relation to the designs. And again, you know, we have huge vulnerabilities associated with the web. And my concern is that what's potentially going to happen here is that we see an inevitable breach in security. We have a cyber issue where a either individual level or a road or a community, a neighborhood, a town, or heaven forbid, a nation. You know, if the US were to experience an electromagnetic pulse, which is also possible both man-made and from the sun,
right,
solar activity, within the US, you could be looking, this is a report by Dr. Isaac Jameson, you could be looking at 2/3 of the population being wiped out within a year as a result of an EMP.
Yeah.
This was talked about in the addendum of his report, Smart Meter, Smarter Practices, which we published some time ago. So where this potentially then goes is if we see that kind of problem manifesting, and like I say, I think it's a question of when rather than if, you can probably expect for extremely tight controls to be introduced to how we use the web. And so where this potentially goes is we are creating a problem that will ultimately lead to a destruction of the internet as we and our behavior on the internet as we know it.
Yeah. Now I want to return to that, but just to give another example here, speaking about logs, let's say, or something like that, you know, fridge open 2:24:11 a.m. fridge close 2:24:46, open for 35 seconds. An RFID enabled package with a chocolate cake was removed from the fridge. Conclusion, he's having an unhealthy snack here at night. Notify the insurance company, time to up the premiums. I mean, there's all kind of scenarios here that could kind of arise from this. But are there logs and profiles that is intended to be built on people, or is that already in place? And if so, are they stored within the confines of the electricity company, or who has these, if so?
Great question. I'm not privy to that information. There are obviously some people that know exactly how this information is going to be used. Talking about the kinds of data that can be gathered, I mentioned this report by Dr. Ian Brown, and you hit on there about some of the profiling that can take place. Looking at just some of these other examples and the kind of invasiveness of the data, it could show whether you're a restless sleeper based on whether or not you have, a habit of switching a light on in the middle of the night. Are you getting up frequently? It could also show, potentially tied into the data that's now being gathered on us by the medical establishment, whether or not people with certain health issues, let's say clinically depressed people or people who have bipolar disorder, whether they have distinctive energy profiles, and whether people have certain kinds of behavioral disorders, if they're regularly doing certain things that are out of the ordinary. I believe that in Alabama recently, there was a tax provision passed requiring obese state employees to pay for their health insurance unless they actively work to reduce their body mass index. So your smart meter could potentially say, well, why aren't you using your treadmill at home at the moment? You haven't used it for the last 6 weeks. You've clearly been out of the house, or you've clearly not been out of the house or away from your computer or TV long enough for aerobic exercise. And so we're going to cut your health insurance contributions.
Yeah, exactly. When you have mandatory health insurance or socialized medicine, then it becomes a responsibility of the government to monitor those costs. And then you're also all of a sudden in the realm of, again, trying to nudge behavioral, patterns of the people that, is in the country, because you have this under the umbrella of economics, pretty much. It becomes, think about that, those future scenarios that could arise from some of this. It's really terrifying,
Yeah, it sure is.
Wow.
So, the level of invasiveness is pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is. Now, let's talk a little bit more here about some of the health impacts as well, in terms of the Wi-Fi technology overall, though, and what you think would happen if we had an expansion of the Internet of Things, and the Wi-Fi communication just increases with just tremendously. Because even if you manage to, and I want to ask you about this later too, but if you manage individually to get your smart meter off on your house, or just keep it off to begin with, it does not guarantee that your neighbors won't have it. There'll be a blanket of Wi-Fi out there. What's going to happen to us? How does this affect us, Mike?
That's right. Important point, because even if you're somebody that has the habit of saying, I have nothing to hide. They can profile my energy usage and analyze me and model me and use that data to exploit me. You're still potentially, even if you say no, you have a concern about the health issue and that's it, potentially your neighbor's smart meters are going to impact on you. And depending on where you live, if you are somebody that at some point in the future lives in one of the smart cities that are being designed, then the likelihood of you being very close to one or many smart meters, irrespective of whether you have one yourself, is very high. So this issue associated with health is a particularly important one, because it's the one thing that you cannot get away with if you say no to a smart meter yourself. This, as I mentioned earlier, issue blindsided me when I first came across it. We all, you know, have used mobile phones and wireless systems. I know until I found out about this, I had Wi-Fi at home. I had cordless phones. The problem really first emerged 10, 15 years ago, at least here within the UK, and there was a big furore over it, and it seemed to kind of die down, and most people will think, well, if it's available, if the product is available, then it must be safe, but you only need to walk into your local corner shop and buy a packet of cigarettes to know that there are products available that aren't safe that come with warnings.
Right.
These wireless technologies come with warnings. Have a look at the manual that came with your iPhone. And it will say, do not use this phone within, I think, 7/8 of an inch of the human body. So the minute you pick up that phone, you've effectively admonished or absolved the manufacturer of any problems, because you're not keeping that phone away from your body.
Yeah.
And I suppose to boil this down, you know, money talks, and the mobile phone companies and wireless data carriers now are finding it increasingly difficult to get insurance companies to cover them for health litigation cases. There, 60% of insurance companies now will not cover mobile and wireless data carriers for health claims. And they've begun modeling brain tumors incidences between 2020 and 2030. So somebody in high finance knows that there is an issue coming. Why? And if the insurance companies are taking that much of a precautionary approach around this, why aren't our governments? As I mentioned, that there are some governments that are taking measures across Europe. Here in the UK, we have some of the slackest standards of any industrialized nation. I think it's only second to the US and possibly Canada. And these are standards that were created years ago, and they effectively state that if your body doesn't heat up by more than 1 degree after 6 minutes of use, then it's safe to market. It takes no account of the so-called non-thermal effects, i.e. if it doesn't cause you an electric shock or doesn't cause heating, it's supposedly safe, and that's completely bogus. Fortunately, we're now approaching a point where not only do we have a huge amount of evidence showing that harm is caused, and this has been known about for at least 70 years. The military has known that microwave and radio wave technologies have had an effect on the human body for 80 years or so, and they've known that those effects can be harmful for 60 or 70 years. The Naval Medical Research Institute in 1976, I believe, the archives of Dr. Zori Glazer are available on the web and on our website for everybody to peruse, where they talk in very clear terms about the biological effects caused by radio frequency and microwave radiation, and the effects are considerable. We are beings of frequency. Our brain emits a signal of 7.83 cycles. This just so happens to be exactly the same frequency that's emitted by planet Earth as a result of the fact that it is a sphere within the ionosphere. A frequency is generated, and that frequency is one that we have spent countless, you know, hundreds of thousands of years evolving and developing with. We are directly connected to that frequency. Experiments back in the 1970s showed that if you put people in an underground facility where that frequency is no longer available to them, they'll become ill.
Yeah.
So we're drowning out a lot of these frequencies, and then our body in itself creates frequencies. A lot of our organs generate different frequencies. Our oxygen molecules resonate at 60 gigahertz. That's 60 billion hertz. So between what the brain generates and what our oxygen molecules resonate at, and obviously we have oxygen outside of our body, there is a huge range, a very, very broad spectrum of different frequencies that our body uses to maintain homeostasis and good health. And what's happening is that these frequencies and our bodies are just experiencing a toxic tidal wave of electromagnetic radiation. And a lot of our biological systems, certainly our bees and a lot of pollinators, are struggling to cope. You know, the amount of time that we've had to adapt to this onslaught of wireless radiation is tiny. We simply have not had time in the scheme of things. But some of the problems that it causes, cell damage is a big one. It causes calcium ion damage within our cells, which is used for important cellular communication processes. We've published a paper on our website by Dr. Andrew Goldsworthy that talks about this in great detail. It causes nitric oxide depletion. It causes endothelial cell dysfunction. A big one that it causes is oxidative stress. So it increases reactive oxidative species, ROSs, and that leads to a toxic effect that can produce peroxides and free radicals within our body that can damage our cells. It damages lipids and proteins and DNA within our body. And there's a video available on our website where you can see Professor Henry Lai of the University of Washington showing DNA damage from mobile phone exposure. You know, there is observable effect associated with exposure to these frequencies, and whether it's called 3G, 4G, GPRS, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, a DECT cordless phone, or a wireless baby monitor, these are all different flavors of the same environmental toxin.
Yeah.
There was a study published in Europe, the Reflex study some years ago, that showed a DNA strand that had been exposed to what's called a comet SA had been exposed to 24 hours of mobile phone radiation, which is a non-ionizing radiation source. And it compared it to another DNA strand that had 1,600 chest x-rays. And the effect was pretty much identical. So the pathways are very different in terms of how the damage is caused, but the effects can be very, very similar.
Right.
And one of the problems that we have with that's just added to in this respect is that the microwave radiation can actually switch off enzymes and proteins involved in DNA repair. So it's not only hitting the DNA, first of all, and damaging it, causing double-strand DNA breakage, which has very clearly been linked to carcinogenesis, but it actually inhibits then the repair that's involved in coping with it by the body. One other important, in fact, there's a couple more things here we could talk about. The blood-brain barrier is opened exposure.
Yep.
You know, this is what protects our brain from toxins. Now, if you have this increase in reactive oxidative species that has a toxic effect in the body, and you then have, you know, say on a phone call, your blood-brain barrier opens, you're allowing those toxins to get into the brain. If you have mercury fillings, or you've ever had vaccines that contain mercury, thimerosal, aluminium, whatever it might be, if you go out on a day-to-day basis and you're taking lungs full of exhaust fumes, if you're eating pesticide-laden GMOs, we have these geoengineering programs that are talking about putting aluminium and barium and strontium into the atmosphere. We have pharmaceutical chemicals that we encounter on a day-to-day basis. Then we're talking about a huge increase as well in toxicity that the body's encountering. And so those toxins potentially become available to parts of the brain that previously weren't available to it. A big one is sperm damage. If you look on our site and search for a presentation by Dr. Devra Davis at the National Institute for Environmental Health, she cites a study that shows 4 hours of having a cell phone in your pocket as a male will reduce your sperm by 50%. And the thing about putting it in your pocket is that the specific absorption rate that we use to say, you know, that phones are ostensibly safe, the SAR was never tested for the phone being in your pocket or in your shirt pocket or your trouser pocket. And the exposure that very delicate parts of your anatomy can experience from a cell phone being there is between 4 and 8 times as much as it would do next to your head, where there's a cranium next to it. So, you know, we're seeing with Wi-Fi, people using wireless laptops. I can't remember how long the use was, but there was a study published by a fertility clinic in Cordoba in Argentina that showed using a wireless laptop can produce sperm that has 3 times less motility, 3 times less vitality, and dies 3 times more quickly. We have an Israeli fertility clinic that talks about their view that only 1 in 100 donors now have sperm that will make the grade for the sperm bank.
Wow.
And they described that these are their A team of people. These are young guys that are coming into the clinic to give their sperm to the clinic. And they talk about the fact that we're in real trouble. Women aren't getting out of this either, because it can cause mitochondrial DNA damage. Fetuses are particularly susceptible to this kind of thing. What else have we got? We've got the blood in itself is harmed by wireless radiation. Josh, in the Take Back Your Power film, which I really recommend everybody watches, they can find it on our website, it shows a Rouleau effect in the blood. This was after just 2 minutes exposure to a wireless smart meter. You can actually see the blood clumping. And why this is a problem is that it makes it very difficult for the body to transport oxygen. That increases the acidity in the blood. Cancer thrives in a highly acidic environment. It makes it more difficult for the blood to get rid of waste. And one big one is that it also inhibits melatonin production. So if melatonin is a known oncological agent. The World Health Organization has seen fit to deem night working as a class 2A carcinogen. Wireless radiation is a 2B carcinogen, which is a possible carcinogen. Night working is a probable one because of the effect that working at night has on your melatonin levels. You only produce melatonin when it's dark. It's the thing that makes you feel sleepy, and then you go to sleep, the body continues producing melatonin, and that melatonin repairs any damage that's done to the body during the day.
Right. Yeah.
Well, guess what? That melatonin process is not only inhibited by light, which is another source of non-ionizing radiation for anybody that doubts that non-ionizing radiation can't have an effect.
Right.
But it wireless radiation inhibits it as well. So you're exposed to wireless radiation during the day. Your body is under attack biologically from that wireless radiation. And then at night, when it should be repairing itself, the beneficial ingredient that is designed by the body to repair that damage is switched off. So we have a double whammy in this respect as well. So you know, I could go on, I won't, but we're now at a point where we have a clear much clearer understanding not only what problems the wireless radiation is causing, but how it's being caused as well. And what we're seeing within all over the world is an increase in what we'd call the canaries in the coal mine complaining about health effects. So even though it affects all of our biologies, and in different people it will affect people differently, there is a group of people within the population who have electrohypersensitivity. Unfortunately, within the medical fraternity here in the UK, you have psychologists and psychiatrists who are starting to make noises and say that this is psychosomatic. You know, people can't possibly experience effects from a technology that's safe and available on the market, like, you know, your mobile phone signals.
Right.
But the reality is that it's estimated between 3-5% of the population have acute electrosensitivity, but most people won't realize it. There is a huge number of people, proportionally speaking, here in the UK that suffer from headaches regularly, that have sleep problems, that have heart palpitations, that feel anxious, that feel nervous, that show symptoms associated with electrohypersensitivity. But because this isn't talked about and it's not recognized here as a functional impairment like it is in Sweden, our GPs aren't trained to look for it, so our doctors aren't able to identify it as a potential fact. You know, the wireless radiation is a factor in contributing to this. And 30% of people are estimated to actually have a very mild form, but the numbers are rising. And even though we do have people within the medical fraternity that have close links to wireless technology industries and those that benefit from the proliferation of these technologies, we, again, are now at a point where we know how electrohypersensitivity is caused. We have Professor Dominique Belpomme from ARTAC in Paris, who's developed a methodology to prove whether somebody is electrohypersensitive or not. He can show very clearly whether there are histamine changes and changes in brain chemistry as part of this process. You have Dr. Dietrich Klinghart, who works out of the Washington State, his practice there, the Klinghart Institute. He has his own protocol for determining whether somebody is genuinely EHS or not. And you have Professor von Lebrecht von Klitzing in Germany. These practitioners have all developed their own methodology and protocol for showing whether somebody is electrosensitive or not. And the reality is that a lot of people genuinely feel a harmful effect when in close proximity to wireless radiation, and unfortunately it's making a lot of people's lives a misery. And we're rolling this out now at such a rate and to such a high degree that there's going to be very few places left to run.
Yeah, we have no idea the full extent of where this is going to go or what it's going to lead to. And as you say, I think a lot of people haven't felt right in a long time because of the onslaught of the various technologies and all the different aspects that you bring up, of course, are small, you know, contributors that creates a bigger picture. Some of them are accumulative. There's a number of issues here, but so it's obviously not a pretty picture. It's very worrying, in fact. And I want to, you know, get into more details about this, Mike, in the next segment, you know, obviously what can be done in terms of protection and defense, if there is such a thing, against all of it. Some cases there is, if these, you know, if we look at the smart meter, if we can get them off the walls, etc. But I also want to zoom out later and ask you more about what kind of system we're actually building here and that kind of artificial biosphere that is being constructed kind of around us. But before we do that though, Mike, before we proceed, let's give out your website right here, because you have just tons of information on there, which is just excellent. And you've just collected all the good stuff in terms of, you know, proof for people who still, you know, after all of this would doubt that there's, real tangible risks with all of this. You have some solutions, you have everything else. And then, of course, give us out if there's anything else you want to plug. You know, obviously you were part in the movie, Take Back Your Power. But if there's anything else you have out there, you know, if you do speaking engagements and such, Mike, so please go ahead and do that.
Thanks, Henrik. Ending on this part of the interview on a positive note, I got into this fight very much with on my mind the fact that we can absolutely change this. The only thing that's enabling this to happen is people being unaware of the issues that are at stake and quietly going along and complying with what is tantamount to incredibly biologically destructive technologies that surveil you in the sanctity of your own home. We have a saying here in the UK that an Englishman's home is his castle, and that castle is potentially going to be invaded. We all have the right to say no. Whether the energy company likes it or not, it's their job to serve you with the energy and utility that you want. And they don't have the right to irradiate you. They don't have the right to cause you harm. They don't have the right to spy on you at the same time, unless you give them express permission, and anybody else does that's affected by it. So stand on your rights. They're very hard won by your previous generations, your ancestors. And even if you don't care about your rights, maybe consider whether your children or your grandkids might care about the fact that you had an opportunity to stand up on them but didn't. You can stand on your rights. You can say no. We encourage everybody to give out leaflets and to just reach out to other people. Talk to people and explain to them just how this is going to potentially impact on them, on their health, their privacy, their safety at home, and their bills. And you might be surprised by the response you get. The people we talk to, very receptive. Nobody wants to see their bills increasing, and especially here in the UK, everybody's kind of cottoning onto the fact that these energy companies are serving their shareholders and not serving the consumer. So our website is stopsmartmeters.org.uk. I'll promote Josh's film, Take Back Your Power, which is excellent. You can find that at /film. And by all means, we don't have the last word on the smart meter issue. Please get informed, set up your own campaign, reach out to your neighbors and your community and try and create smart meter free zones. It can happen. Please take action.
Very good. stopsmartmeters.org.uk. We're going to have the website up. We'll take a short break here, ladies and gentlemen, and stay with us, Mike. We'll be right back with more.